Yeah, let's hear it for PJ and the band this morning, bringing it as they always do. I think we just want to do that because it was such a cool song, even though it does tie in with what we're talking about today, and you guys rocked it, so thank you. Hey, my name's Kurt, and I'm lead pastor at Crosspoint. Really excited that you're with us today. If it's your first time with us here at Crosspoint, welcome. As Eric said, we are in preview mode, so realize there's a few things we're still working through, but very excited that you're here with us today, and we are in week 3 of this series, #4Fishers, and we're talking about, you know, why we do some of the things we do around here. We thought, you know, as we move into this new space, it'd be really important for everybody here, regardless of whether you've been here for a while or you just began attending Crosspoint or checking us out for maybe the first time, to know what this team is about, what this group of people here known as the tribe at Crosspoint is about. And so I'm going to say we a lot today. I'm going to use the word we a lot. And when I say we, I realize I'm not necessarily assuming that you believe everything that I'm saying. I realize that you may not be doing everything that I'm talking about, because I realize we're all in different places in our spiritual journey, come from different backgrounds, different spiritual persuasions. But when I say we, I'm talking about the core of people around here, people who may never be seen up on the stage, people who serve behind the scenes, just serving their guts out around here, making this place go. And so we're going to take a look at that today. Now, a statement that kind of captures what this place is about, that just kind of boils it down, is this statement right here. Actually, two of them. One is that we want to be a church where it's okay not to have it all together. From the very beginning, we said this place should be a place where you don't have to put a front on, you don't have to put a facade and look like your life is all together to walk in the doors, but you can actually be you. And, come with all your baggage and be authentic about where you're at. And then the next statement is really kind of our missional statement. And that's that we want this to be a place where you can explore and pursue an intimate relationship with God, not just knowing about him, but actually knowing him as well as getting engaged in meaningful relationships with others. That's what we do around here. And many of us have never heard that before, or maybe you've heard it before, but you just don't remember it, or, you know, maybe you know, you're like, oh yeah, that's what this place is about. But we just thought it was important to remind us that these are the things that we're about here at Crosspoint. So today, we got a great video scene that I want to show you real quick. Somebody sent me this week, actually sent it to PJ, sent it to our team, and it talks about vision, and it's set in kind of a military setting. It's from the new TV show, The Last Ship, which is on TNT, and I just saw it. I thought, you know, this really captures kind of the heart of what we're about as we run after these things we call hills, which I'll explain in just a moment. So take a look at this scene here.
Data said the wind was coming. It's gotta come, right?
I'm guessing the Navy told you about my car accident.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
Well, there's something they don't even know about. It was my fault. Tried to pass a car on a curve, didn't see the oncoming truck. I killed my wife and my girls. I was in the ICU for 82 days. 7 times I coded, 7 times they brought me back. In between, I had plenty of time to think and to wonder, why did God leave me here? Why did he spare me? There must be a purpose, some reason. And that's what I told myself. That's how I woke up every day and put one foot in front of the other. It was faith that got me through. But these past weeks, that faith has been replaced with certainty. I am here for a reason, as are you, as is everyone aboard this ship. You are here to lead us, and we are here to follow, to execute your vision.
I don't have a vision.
You do. When you stuck your hand in that engine fuse, when you turned us away from home, when you got us out of Gitmo, there's a voice inside you. Maybe it's your highest self, maybe it's the voice of God, I don't know, but it's a voice of hope. You've listened to it so far. All you have to do is keep listening. Our journey does not end here.
You know, really fascinating clip. You know, one of the things that's really interesting about it, one of the things I love about veterans, among other things, the number one thing I love about veterans is that you've actually defended our country. If you're a veteran today, man, hats off to you. We love, you know, the commitment you've had to our country. And so when I see things like this, it reminds me of that. But one of the other things I love about veterans is anybody who's fought on a battlefield understands what it means to take a hill. They understand that, you know, when you get on that hill, there's certain ground and territory that you're taking. When you get on that hill, then you die. There's certain things that you will die for in order to maintain that hill. And a number of years ago when Crosspoint started, we had these things called defining values that we developed that kind of went along with our mission statement. And you know, as we looked at those, just like any organization, you're kind of like, you know, does anybody really know what these things are? I mean, if you work in a business or someplace where they have values, you know, you see them on a wall, you walk past the poster, and yet you never really pay attention to what they say. And people just kind of mindlessly walk past them. Sometimes, you know, we'll bail on them if profit can be increased if we go a different direction. And so we said, you know, for Crosspoint, these things, these defining things aren't really just values, but they're hills. These are hills that we take and that we say, you know, we're willing to lay our lives down for. And so today, I want to take a look at these defining hills and what it looks like when we live these out. And one of the things I want us to visually capture is that when we, you know, live these things out, it's like we're watering. It's like we're like just you know, hydrating the seeds that God is planting, that he is trying to grow and develop in people. And so let's take a look at our logo. We're going to put this on the screens. You guys have probably seen this before, but realize all of these circles around this logo actually represent one of our hills. And maybe you didn't know that. And there's not four of them, not six of them. There's actually eight of them. And so we're gonna look at these today. And the first two we really looked at last week. In fact, the first one is love God. That's an arrow pointing up. And then the second one is love others, which is arrows kind of going together. This idea of doing life on life, serving one another. And I don't really want to spend too much time on these two today because I covered them last week as we talked about how, you know, we run here at Crosspoint. And if you weren't here last week, then, you know, check out our website, crosspointweb.org. Podcasts are free, by the way. We think the internet should be known for more than, you know, free porn and $5 sermons. So, you know, everything's free on there. You don't have to pay anything for it. But go back and listen because, you know, we looked at how at Crosspoint we run. And one of the reasons we run to create an environment where people can grow in their love for God is because we see God depicted in the Bible. In fact, there's one particular story, the story of the loving father, the tight anal older brother, or the prodigal son, however you know it, where God is depicted as running after someone who's disconnected from him. Not running after somebody to throw moral commands out, not to condemn someone, but running, you know, to people who have needs. People who are in poverty, or maybe the other end of that, people who have everything, scads and scads of stuff, and yet deep inside there's something still missing. And so that's what we do around here. We run. We create an environment for people to grow in their love for God. But also, as we experience that, we're called to love others and to exemplify that and to run after others by serving and giving our lives away so that others can experience what we experience. This is what we do. We run. We don't philosophize about it. We don't think about it. We don't pray about it. We just do it. We run. We engage with people. It's one of the reasons that volunteering is such a big deal around here. As Eric mentioned a few minutes ago, we have this volunteer ramp-up card. You know, every now and then I'll have somebody come up to me and they'll be like, man, Kurt, I'm ready to go to the next new place. I just want to grow in my relationship with God. And I'm like, great, we're all about that. We want to put water on that. We want to hydrate that. And so, you know, we say, you know, usually I'll say something like, well, let me ask you a question. Where are you serving around here? Like, oh, well, I'm not talking about that. I want to grow with God. I want to know God deeply. I'm like, that's great. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to do that. But where are you serving? Where are you serving? Because you see, if you're going to grow in your relationship with God, you have to be engaged in giving your life away to others. And that's why when I see a bunch of yellow and orange shirts, I mean, I just want to come out and hydrate you. In fact, there's a better way to do that. I can just hydrate you like this right here. Just a few of you who are out here, right? I can just kind of like do this number right here. Hit a few of you that have yellow on, right? A few people that serve in the band. Because we like to hydrate that. I've been dying to do that, by the way. That's why we put a big old drain right here in the front of the platform. We want to hydrate that. We want people to know that this is one of the ways we grow. And when you do that, you're learning to be a blessing, which is one of the things God has called us to do. And so maybe your next step today, we have next steps on the back of our connection card. I'm going to talk about them through the course of the teaching this morning. Maybe your next step is to fill out this ramp-up card and begin to serve in one of our environments here at Cross Point. All right, being a blessing. Third hill we have around here is something we call doing life together. Right now, as winsome or maybe crazy as you think we're in, you know, we're presenting in here today, or as nice as our website is, or as cool as the music is, listen, here's the thing: if you don't have relationship with other people who are running after God, right, if you're not in a regular environment with people who are running after God, then there's going to be a lid on your spiritual formation. Right? God created us to be in relationship with others. He created us to know one another and to be known. Take a look at the book of Hebrews, chapter 10. The writer says this. He says, "And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as we see the day approaching." So he says, meet together. See, here's the thing. We this hard belief that the church is way more than 70 minutes in the seats right here. Right? Church is way more than this. Church is when we get out of rows and we get into circles. That's what life together is. We get out of rows and we get into circles in Starbucks, in people's homes, and we actually share life with one another. One of the most important things that we do all year around this place is something called the All Church Journey. And if you're newer, if you've been around here for, say, 6 or 8 months or less, then you're not familiar with an all-church journey. It's a time when everything that happens in this room happens in our student ministry, it happens in our kids' environments, and it's a time when our entire community goes the same direction. We go after a common theme, and we do a deep dive on that theme for 6 weeks. And we give you all kinds of like free materials. We'll give you, in fact, we're going to be doing the Consume Journey this upcoming fall. And we'll give you a personal guide that's free. We'll give you things that you can read and you can kind of track with. And it's a way to kind of grow your spiritual life. And then, you know, one of the things that happens is, you know, we band together in small groups for 7 weeks. And we encourage every single person that connects at Cross Point to get into a small group for 7 weeks. And when I say everybody does this, everybody does this, all right? It's last year. I think it was like 92% of our adult population was in a small group at some point over the 7 weeks. And I'm still trying to figure out how to get the 8% of you that weren't to leave. All right? Because, you know, not because I want you to leave, but because we care so much about your growth that we don't want you just sitting in the seats. And if your idea of church is just coming and sitting and never engaging with people, then we feel like we're not doing you, we're just doing a disservice to you to allow you to do that. And so, you know, you can sign up today. In fact, two months in October, we begin our fall journey. And one of the next steps is saying, hey, I want to be a host for this. And so if you want to be a host, if you want to get a jump start on this, because some people like to prepare ahead, they like to get some training, which we'll provide some training for you, you can be a host. You can sign up to host a group. And we need 50 group hosts, by the way, 50 of them, all right? That's twice as many as we had last year to allow people to get out of rows and into circles. And you might be thinking, well, Kurt, I can't host a group. Listen, the requirements are very minimal, all right? Basically, you need to have lips to host, all right? I mean, we don't even care if they're good lips. They could be Botox-filled lips. I mean, we don't care. You know, you just need to be able to use your lips to call people together, to gather people. You need to have a place to meet, whether it's, you know, here in the third space or at Starbucks, whatever it might be, and the ability to call them together. And it doesn't matter if you're an atheist or an agnostic, if you're still exploring Jesus, or if you've been walking with him for 20 years. We will give you the resources that will guide you and lead your group so you don't have to figure out what to say. You just read what's in there, and the group will have their experience. We need 50 small group hosts for this fall journey. And so today, maybe that's your next step, is saying, hey, I want to get in community. I have some friends that need to be in community. I know if I host something, they will come. They'll explore it. They'll check it out. And listen, this is just one of the ways that we get people closer to God. And so we want to hydrate this. We just want to, you know, we believe that when this happens, when we water what happens here, that people grow. People grow. And so we die on that hill of helping people experience growth. Next one, next hill, fourth hill, is the hill of life change. Life change. Life change means wherever I am right now, I want to go in a new direction. I want to go in a different direction. Whatever I'm feeling right now, I'm ready to go to that next new place. Now, If there were a Jesus scale, all right, and say Jesus was like 10 on the scale and 1 was like, I don't know, your mother-in-law or something. I don't know, you know, there's a scale. Which wouldn't be my mother-in-law. I have a great mother-in-law. She wouldn't be a 1. But let's say there was a Jesus scale, all right? And see, here's the thing. We get more excited about somebody who's maybe a 1.9 on the Jesus scale last year, and this year they take an inventory and they figure out, oh, man, I've grown to 2.0. I've gone up one tick on the scale. We get more excited about that than we do about somebody who, say, last year tested out saying they were like a 9.0 on the Jesus scale, which, first of all, they'd be lying because it'd never happen, all right? And so we get kind of upset about that, but then maybe this year they test out at an 8.9, and they're like, man, I'm still really up there. I've not gone anywhere, but I'm hovering at the top. Listen, we're not impressed. We're not impressed with spiritual pedigree or head knowledge, right? What you know, we're not interested in doing the right do's and just people who don't do the right don'ts. I mean, you know, what we're interested in is people who are growing, people who are changing. You know, people who are saying, you know, this is what God wants my life to be about, and I'm actually moving in that direction. It's called growth. It's called change. There are probably more people than you would care to know around this place that are dealing with some kind of addiction, you know, some kind of treatment, you know, for narcotics, for alcohol, for porn addictions, you name it. More people than you probably would like to know. And it's interesting because when I talk with some of these people, when I, you know, have counseling appointments, and you know what I'll say to them? I'll be like, you know what? Sometimes they'll be like, man, I just feel really bad. I feel like I should be in a different place. And here's what I'll usually say to them. I just say, you know what? The fact that you're in treatment right now, the fact that you're actually growing to a new place out of where you've been, you're probably healthier than half the people that walk in the doors at Crosspoint who think they're all up on the Jesus scale really good, but there's nothing growing in their life. They're not going anywhere. I love the fact if you're dealing with some of that stuff, that you're actually dealing with it. You're actually going somewhere. Right, we get excited when we see people changing like that. Take a look at 1 Peter chapter 2. It says this. Therefore, rid yourselves of all malice and all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. Like newborn babies, crave pure spiritual milk so that by it you may grow up in your salvation. He says, grow up in your relationship with Jesus. He says, grow up in the things that are in you and around you. He says, hey, there's certain things you need to put off. You need to begin to stamp those out. But then grow up. Actually say, okay, where am I at? And what does it look like for me to go to a new place? And see, when we begin to see people stare their stuff in the face, and they begin to say, yeah, you know, I've got some problems. And that's one of the reasons I love that video clip earlier. Because, you know, here's a guy that's like, hey, you probably know about, you know, my past. I mean, we're all about, hey, you know, we've all got a past. Instead of, you know, swiping it under the rug, let's get it out in the open. Because when we get it out in the open, it's like the water begins to help those seeds that God has planted us, wherever we are, just begin to grow. And we love that. We die on the hill of life change. We die on that hill. We love to see people grow. Fifth hill. Fifth hill is a little gold star. It's called excellence. Fifth hill is the hill of excellence. Excellence is giving God your best. All right, excellence is not perfection. Excellence is not, you know, saying, oh, as long as I'm a little better than the person next to me. I mean, you see what they're doing? I'm better than them, so I'm good. No, excellence is just saying, hey, whatever your best is, then do your best. We have a bag up here. In fact, this Bucket Project bag. You know, one of the reasons I love the Bucket Project, we've been doing this for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, and it came out of somebody who attends Crosspoint. He used to be the principal at IPS 96, and now they're a principal up here in HSC. But, you know, we realized there are kids. What I learned was there were kids that were not going to school in the fall because they had no clothing. And these are kids who are in poverty, and one of the greatest ways to get, the greatest levers to get kids and families up and out of poverty is education. And so we came along and said, hey, what if we provide school uniforms for kids who can't go to school because they don't have the right clothing? And so the Bucket Project was born. We want to pour into the buckets of these kids' lives. And so one of the things that I love about this, one of the things that really strikes a chord with us, isn't that kids are getting clothed. I mean, I think Jesus said something about feeding the naked and, you know, giving food to the hungry. I mean, that's a really important thing. But above and beyond that, one of the things that just you know, really strikes a chord with me is when I see these bags come back filled with clothes, you know, there's a shopping list on here, and it tells you kind of what to buy if you want to go after this week. But when I see clothing come back that you would put on your kids, I mean, that man, I tell you what, that's excellence right there. You know, instead of going to like Goodwill and saying, well, these kids don't have anything, so I'm going to put, you know, some clothing in here that somebody else has worn. Well, if you wouldn't do it for your kids, why would you do it for somebody else's kids? I love that these kids that are in poverty are getting clothing and shoes and things that maybe they never could have, and yet it's building into their esteem and their self-confidence when they have nice-looking clothing and they can actually go to school, get an education, and their family down the road may never know the poverty that they ever experience. I love that. I love that. It's giving God your best. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Old Testament prophet by the name of Malachi. It's like the last book in the Old Testament known as Malachi. I don't know if you've ever heard of Malachi. You may have heard of Malachi, the Malachi Crunch. Ever heard of that? They also had like, what was her name? Pinky Tuscadero. Remember that? Remember her? Remember her from Happy Days? Pinky Tuscadero. They're all like in the same family. No, not really. Actually, his name was Malachi. If you know anything about the Bible, this is actually the Old Testament, last book of the Old Testament is the name Malachi. I just like Malachi. It's like the Italian prophet, right? And so Malachi, basically in Malachi, this is the last old book in the Old Testament, and God starts drilling down into the people that are following him, and he's kind of like, why are you not bringing me your best? That's what he's getting after. Now, They had a sacrificial system back in Malachi's day, and so this was before Jesus. Jesus came and was the perfect lamb. That's what the cross is all about, but this was before Jesus. And so, you know, before all that happened, God was kind of getting his people ready to understand what it meant to have a sacrificial lamb bring grace into their lives. And so he would ask them to bring their best lamb, and they'd bring it to the altar. They'd lay it on the altar, and he'd actually have them hold on to the lamb while they sacrificed it, while they cut its head off, right there on the altar. And what he was trying to do was help people see, wow, God is actually, God isn't just a God of justice, because really, if God was just a God of justice, man, I'm the one that should be on that you know, altar being sacrificed. My life should be taken for all the wrong things I've done. But they're saying, whoa, God is a God of justice, but he's also a God of grace. He actually provided something to take the penalty for my sin. And so God is a God of justice. He has to deal with sin, but he's also a God of grace. And he was wanting them to experience and see this. And so God says to them, he said, I want you to bring your best lambs. Just bring your best lambs. Not your perfect lamb. All right, not the one that's better than your neighbor's lamb. Don't watch your neighbor and be like, oh, well, they're taking that lamb. So I'm going to take one that's just a little better, but not my best lamb. He's like, no, bring your best lamb. And of course, you can imagine the people, right? They're like, why would I do that? Why would I mean, if the lamb's going to get killed, why would I bring my best lamb? I'm going to bring the one that has dandruff that my kids don't want to hang out with, right? I'm going to bring the lamb that, you know, is about to die or has that hangnail that just stinks all the time. And why would I bring my best lamb if it's only going to die? And so God gets upset with this. And here's what he says in Malachi chapter 1. He says, try offering them your governor. To your governor, would he be pleased with you? Would he accept you? Oh, that one of you would shut the temple doors so that you would not light a useless fires on my altar. He says, I am not pleased with you, says the Lord Almighty, and I will not accept the offerings from your hands. So God's like, oh, hang on. These gifts you're bringing, would you offer that to the governor? I mean, if you had a city council member or the mayor from your city come to your house or a neighbor that you really wanted to impress, would you put the same thing on the table for them that you're bringing to me? He's like, why is it then when you come to my house, you just bring the garbage? I mean, why is it you bring the leftovers? He's like, you know, you bring the best to your financial life. You bring the best to your physical fitness life. You know, you bring the best when you're out to eat. You bring your best to your work life. But he's like, hey, when you come to me, you bring the garbage. It's like he's on the basketball court, and he's just like, get it out of here. He's rejecting it, right? He's like, shut the doors. Shut the doors. Would somebody shut the doors? He's like, because it isn't your best. He's like, I want you to bring your best offering. Whether it's a lamb or financial offering or, you know, it's a gift of serving babies in our nursery. He says, bring your best. Don't bring your B game, bring your best. If you're brewing coffee for Starbucks or for Crosspoint, but you also work for Starbucks, he says, hey, approach your work here the same way you would your job that you get a paycheck for. Why do you do your job? Is it just because you get a paycheck? Or do you feel like it's one of the ways God can use you to be a blessing to people? A few years ago, We replaced some of the TVs in our children's environments. We had some new panel TVs that came in, some new gaming systems, and And, you know, we were talking about it'd be really cool for kids. We want our kids' environments to be a place where kids run to, all right? There's a lot of content, a lot of cool things that happen for their growth and learning, but we believe they should have things that they know and are used to, especially if they're not familiar with the church environment. So, you know, we had some new panel flat screens and some gaming systems, and this was a little bit controversial for a few people. There's a few people who are struggling with this. In fact, I had one guy who came up to me, and he said, well, Kurt, you know, can I ask you a question? He said, you know, I was just wondering why we spent so much money on those panel TVs, you know, instead of like buying like a cheap 19-inch and giving the rest of the money to the poor. I mean, shouldn't we be doing that? And I said, well, you know, that's a great question. I mean, that's actually a really good question. I said, you know, one of the things we have to do around here every week is we have to kind of decide, and, you know, how are we going to allocate our resources? You and I do that at home. We have to do that here organizationally. You know, what are the things that are important? And yes, we do build into poverty. We believe that's very important. But we also feel like there are other things that we need to build into as well. And so we have this whole list of things that we kind of go after. It's actually things that are represented in what I'm talking about today. And I said, and by the way, those TVs were actually donated. Somebody heard us talking. They're like, oh, we just want to bless, you know, the kids at Crosspoint with a bunch of TVs and gaming systems. And that wasn't good enough for him. He's like, well, but why, when he came and asked you that, why didn't you just say, hey, why don't you buy cheap ones for us and donate the rest to the poor? I mean, it was like whatever I said wasn't good enough. So finally, I was kind of frustrated. And I said, well, excuse me, what kind of TV do you have in your house? Oh, well, man, I just got a nice new 52-inch plasma. I just bought it this week. I'm like, well, why didn't you, like, buy a 19-inch and give the rest to the poor? Oh, well, I mean, I got a really good deal on it. I'm like, well, we did too. They're free. We're free. Why are we having this conversation? You know, and it's just interesting to me how we have a double standard. You know, we're like, when it's my life and my stuff, which is a whole nother message for another time, when we begin to think that everything I own is mine, when really it's all God's and we just get to use it. We think, oh, this is my stuff, so I can do what I want. No, we approach the way we run Crosspoint the same way we do our homes. You know, this is God's stuff, God's money, in terms of how we allocate it. You know, this stage I'm standing on, this was actually built by one of our volunteers, and it was really fascinating because about a week ago when this was getting installed, and there's still some finishing things have to work, be done with paint and that kind of thing, but when Ryan was building this, I'm like, dude, you rocked it on this stage. I mean, and what was so cool was he built this stage as if he was building it to put in his house, all right, or as if he was building it as a part of his business to, you know, install in somebody else's house. I love that. That's why I just want to water it all, because we love the principle of, you know, people bringing their best with whatever they do, whether it's serving kids or building a stage or, you know, whatever it might be. You know, we die on that hill. We die on that hill. Next one, cultural relevance. Two arrows going out into the world. Culturally current communication. You know, this is where you speak the language of your culture through whatever methods need to be done. See, most religions of the world religions, most religions think that God is way up in the heavens, some distant figure off that never really comes down and messes around with everyday men and women like you and I. I mean, the gods just stay up, and they send messages down, but they never really get down. And so if you look at Greek mythology, or, you know, they're always way up there sending messages down. In fact, Buddha, I think, one time said, I know nothing of God, but I know much of man. He couldn't get it. He couldn't figure it out. And Jesus, the scripture says, is God. And God takes on flesh in the form of Jesus, the form of flesh and love, and he actually gets down on the ground. He bursts into the middle of humanity and gets down on the ground with the people he's running after. Why? Because God wants to communicate with the people he's running after through whatever mode of communication they use. I mean, if God wanted us, was really primarily concerned about dogs, he would have come as a dog. If God was primarily concerned with mists and auras and, you know, just the spirit, oh, God's a mist, well, then he probably would have come as a mist. But he doesn't. He comes in love and flesh because he wants to get down on the ground and communicate with people just like people. You know, the Bible, let's see if I can find a Bible around here. Oh, yeah, I have my Bible on my iPad. You know, the Bible is a culturally relevant form of communication. All right, I mean, this is, you know, words on a page, on a paper, are culturally relevant forms of communication. And in fact, Gutenberg, back in like the 1500s, 1600s, he started printing the Bible. And people are like, yeah, keep doing that. That's culturally relevant. Let's use our technology to get this in the hands of everybody. And you know, because see, up to that point, there were scribes that were actually writing this out, and every now and then they would make mistakes, and if I was writing it, you wouldn't be able to read it, and so, you know, people had a hard time working through, you know, certain reproductions of literary works, and so, you know, Gutenberg said, let's get this in the hands of as many people as possible. And when I read the Bible, let me see here, let's go to like maybe, let's go to Romans chapter 8. It says things like, therefore, there is now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. Every now and then I'll be meeting with somebody and maybe they're really struggling with guilt. Maybe they've done something. And even though they've been forgiven, they're really struggling with how that, you know, with just getting past that. And I'll be like, hey, you know what Romans chapter 8 says? It says, therefore, anybody who now has a relationship with Christ, there's no condemnation for you. Here, just take it. Here, just take it with you. And people are like, you just defamed a Bible. No, this is like ink and paper right here, all right? That's all this is, all right? I've got the Bible on my handheld device. You know, sometimes, you know, God speaks and God's word is on the screens through videos. Sometimes God's word is, you know, on a podcast. You know, sometimes it's spoken. You know, Jesus, when Jesus came, you know, he came in a time when the Bible was written and the primary language was Greek. But what's interesting is he spoke in Koinonia Greek. He didn't speak in highbrow Greek. He didn't speak in classical Greek. No, he spoke Koinonia Greek is what he used because this was the street language of the everyday people. Because he wanted to communicate in a form and in a way that everyday people, the people he was interacting with, the people he was running after, could understand. These screens that are surrounding me. I tell you what, the first time I stood up here, I'm like, whoo, man, a lot of light around us up here. And it was interesting because when we were kind of working through with our sound guys and media techs, you know, what kind of screens we were going to get, we had some decisions to make. We had to decide, are we going to move our old, you know, 3x4 ratio screens in here that are cheap because they're free because we own them, right? Are we going to let those little things fill the space? Or are we going to go more relevant with like a, you know, 1080p native resolution projector? I think these are like 16x9 or something like that. And we had a decision to make right there of whether we were going to spend money and be culturally relevant because you're hard-pressed to go into anybody's home and find, you know, a home, even a TV that's not 16x9. Doesn't have 1080 resolution or higher anymore. And so we had to decide, are we going to speak the language of our culture and are we going to spend more, quite a bit more, on culturally relevant communication? And that's what we did. And we don't feel like that's unholy. We don't feel like that's dirty. We think it's necessary. And so when we see screens like this, we just kind of walk up and we're like, let's water these things right here, all right? Let's, you know, we love to water the principle of being culturally relevant in how we're communicating. It's just stuff. I know some of you are bothered. You're like, oh, we just bought those. It's brand new. It's just stuff. It's a tool to be culturally relevant. And we die. We want to hydrate that principle because we believe that that's how people connect and grow. Next hill. Next hill is the hill of multiplication. We want to die on the hill of multiplication or reproduction. We want to build into people outside of ourselves because that's what God calls us to do. In fact, God is about reproduction. God is about building into others outside of himself. Jesus reproduced himself into 12 people. Those 12 people reproduced themselves into 100 and some people. Those 100 and some people created a movement over 2,000 years ago that's still spanning the globe, and you're actually here today as a result of it. See, we want to go outside of ourselves to people who are outside of ourselves, and we want to reproduce ourselves in those people. You know, whether that's leaders reproducing leaders or churches reproducing churches. You know, when we were a year and a half years old, Crosspoint was barely 2, and we were already reproducing a church, sending a church, a group of people out up into Pendleton, because that's just what we understand that we do. People who are following Christ, reproducing themselves into other people and helping them grow in their relationship with Christ. Every now and then, somebody will say to me, they're like, oh man, Crosspoint's getting so big, getting too big for me. I'm like, what do you mean by too big? And they're like, oh, it's just getting too big. And I'm like, too big? What does too big mean? Does that mean like we were fine when you came, but once you came, then, oh, we're too big. I'm here now, so clamp it down, shut the doors. I mean, what does that mean? I mean, you realize if we started hearing that when we were like 200 people here. I mean, we heard that like 5 years ago. And you realize if we would have clamped the doors down then, that more than half of you wouldn't be here? If we would have clamped the doors down when we moved across the street 2 weeks ago, you know, probably over 100 of you wouldn't be here today because of that. You know, what does it mean, too big? And it's not that we just want to feel good by having more people, but we just realize that naturally healthy things should grow. That's what healthy things do. They grow. In fact, take a look at the book of Acts. It talks about the earliest Christ followers and the acts of the first Christians who are actually running after the things that God runs about. Acts 5 says, "Nevertheless, more and more men and women believed in the Lord and were added to their number daily." Other times it says there were 2,000 that were added to their number. Other times it says 3,000 were added to their number. But basically what it says is when you're a love machine and you're helping people see Jesus for who he really is, and you're understanding that your primary purpose is to be a blessing to others, what happens is numbers keep increasing. Because living things that are healthy grow. That's what happens. We die on that hill. We want to reproduce ourselves. Last one. Arrow pointing down, like a carrot in the ground, is the hill of provision. Provision. So we have this belief that, you know, God provides. In fact, everything I've talked about today, you know, these are the things that we spend money on. These are the things that we plan after. These are the things we invest in because we believe these are the things that help people grow. And one of the ways we do that is just by giving ourselves away. In fact, this right here, this is a calendar. And this calendar kind of represents the cash on hand that we typically have in our bank account here at Crosspoint, which, you know, basically is about 30 days. At any given point, we have about 30 days of cash on hand to fund the ministry of Crosspoint. Sometimes people are like, "Oh, man, you got a nice new building. You must have hundreds of thousands of dollars." No. You know, we have maybe 30 days operating cash on a good month. You know, I mean, nobody's getting rich around here. Nobody's filling their pockets. There's no deep coffers. You know, this is just ordinary, normal people building in to what God is doing here. And you know, I wish we had more. I mean, it'd be awesome if we had more, because if we had more, that would mean that we could do more stuff. But basically what comes in, we use, we spend. I mean, if we had more, that would actually show that we're reproducing at a greater level, because people are seeing that, hey, when I give, I reinvest, you know, the opportunity for others to experience what I've experienced, and we're actually reproducing givers. But we've become very comfortable with living with a very slim margin of about 30 days overhead, because we realize that what we have, we need to immediately be putting it into practice. Immediately. Maybe your next step today is to say, "Hey, I'm gonna financially fuel this place." Maybe you've never done that. Maybe you want to begin to fuel on the back of your card. So I'm gonna make the commitment to begin fueling what God is doing here, so others can experience what I've experienced in this place. Here's what it says in 1 Corinthians 3. Paul says, "I planted the seed in your hearts, and Apollos watered it, but it was God who made it grow." So we die on this hill of provision. We believe that when we use what God has given us, it just waters the seeds. It fuels the life change. It fuels the growth of what God has put in to this place. You know, last Saturday, our prayer team did a walkthrough in here before our very first service. And we walked through the whole building, through every classroom, every environment, coffee bar, you know, office space, and the team just prayed. You know, these spaces would be used for the seeds that are planted, and that they would be watered through what happens around here, and that people would actually grow. And we got into this room and prayed over the stage and, you know, the tech booth, and then the team split up and we prayed over every seat in this room. And it was fascinating because I prayed over kind of this section, because this is this area where I typically sit. And every time I'd get to the end of the row, I mean, I'd pray over every seat, and I was touching each one as I was going. I get to the end of the row, the very end of the row over there. I don't even know who's sitting over there right now. But God just impressed on me, you know, the people who sit in these seats may feel like they're sitting on the fringe, because, man, I just don't know that God's grace could reach out to me, so I'm going to kind of sit on the edge. Now, I'm not saying people are sitting on the fringes. That's where you are. I'm just saying that's what God impressed on me. And so I just started praying for people that sit on the edges of this room as I got to those outside seats. God, would you just help people to see that your provision of grace reaches even to the far reaches, to the furthest edge of this room. Because God provides, not just financially, not just for our daily needs, but he provides the grace that we need, even when we're at the very outskirts of feeling like God could never reach me to where I am. And let me just say, if that's where you are, that cross point's here for you. That's why we created a place like this. We don't have to have it all together. And you can realize that God made an incredible provision where his grace could reach even to you. So where do we go with this? Man, these are the hills. These are the things that drive this place. And you might connect with some of them. You might not like them all. But I want us to think through, what's my role in this? So take out your connection cards. I've been referring to them all morning. But I'm not really going to go through them again. But maybe there's a step. Maybe there's a way where it's time for you to grow and go to a next new place by saying, okay, here's now. My initiative is now to engage in this way, to build into people in this way. For God to use my life as a blessing, to bless others in this way. See, listen, last week we talked about how our first week in here, we had a decision to make. We had to decide whether we were going to continue to be after the things God is about or whether we're just going to kind of settle in and play church. And we're really not about super soakers and water and screens and groups and kids' environments. I mean, those are all things we do. What we're about is people. And all of these things help us run after people and create an environment where they can maybe see that there's a God who runs after people. And man, when that happens, listen, we just want to hydrate that. We want to be like, whoa, that grows every single one of us. Because that's what happens. We put water on it and it begins to grow. It begins to grow. Let me pray for us. God, I'm asking that you would help us to see that you run harder and you run faster for every single person in this room. And that this is a place that we try to build into. We've laid our lives down a lot of ways. I mean, not to the point of death. But there are many people who serve their guts out around here to help others see that you're a God who runs after them. And God, just help us to see, even in these moments, as you continue to nudge us and kind of prompt us, that there's no place that your love can't reach. There's nobody that cannot, that's not, you know, acceptable to be used. You can use every single one of us to help carry the grace of Christ to people on the fringes who feel like maybe there's not a place for them to ever connect with you. And so God, help us as a tribe to just have our heart beat after the things that your heart beats after. Pray these things in your name and according to your character. Amen. All right, we're going to sing and PJ is going to lead us. And as we do that, if you haven't filled out your next steps, you know, go ahead and mark this on your card and just say, hey, God, here's where I feel like I'm ready to grow in. And let's stand and sing together.